the order of worship, the Mark passage at the end of the sermon and the Isaiah passage at the beginning. We're talking about darkness. Darkness is the word, even though it's very bright outside today, and I'm very happy about that. I want to say that darkness is a human issue. We often look out on the world with our circumstances in the midst of a sunny day like today and become blinded by the darkness of our lives. Light can blind us. Driving into the sun without sunglasses or a visor is something we should not do. But so can darkness be haunting. Driving a road and your headlights fail, that's not desirable. Driving a dark road and you hit thick fog. Life can so cloud our vision with the black that we only see shadows. We often think we are in a different place than the early church. I don't think we are. We celebrate Christ's coming. Christmas, Advent, the prophecy candle was lit, the birth of Christ. We read of witnesses to the resurrection. We hold Bibles in our hands. We know so much more, right? But are we different than early Christians? Pentecost happened and people had to be persuaded that Jesus rose from the dead only 50 days after it happened. Many believed and many didn't. Jesus appears at the end of Matthew's gospel and he's talking to the disciples. And what are we told? Many believed, but some doubted. He was standing there with them. Each stone that crushed Stephen's head came from faithless, unbelieving hands. And also each bended knee from apostolic preaching confessed that Jesus Christ is Lord. And I believe that is the tension we continually are living ourselves. We believe, help our unbelief. We see, but we don't see. Three times in Isaiah's 64 text, in the first three verses, we find this expression, come down. Come down, come down, rend the heavens and come down. Come down to make your name known to your enemies. For when you did things we did not expect, you came down. It was Jesus in John chapter 6, that famous bread passage. He said, I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but the one who sent me. Come down. Is that our Advent prayer? The great priest Henry Nouwen said that our God always descends down the ladder to those at the bottom. We have a descending God. He descends down the ladder to us. That's why he spent the last years of his life, a man who was a Harvard and Yale professor, caring for the severely mentally ill, giving his life for it. The mystery is that our God descended to a fertilized egg. We sang this morning. What did we sing? Mary's maker is Mary's son. What's the mystery there? That's the Nicene Creed mystery, trying to lay it out. He came down by the power of the Holy Spirit. The Word was God, and the Word made Himself nothing. Philippians 2, we're going to confess that at the end of the service. He became a servant of the towel. He came down into our fallen humanity and into our darkness and into our discouragement and into our disease and into our disabilities and into our doubt. And I want to say, behold your God. That's who He is. Now, I have always loved Advent, Christmas. We start Advent Christmas music on October 15th in our home. It will cease Christmas night. The lights sparkle in the dark. Our street's a very festive street. And I can't help but think of the line from John's Gospel, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." A little light just pushes back the darkness. My little Margot, my six-year-old granddaughter, I always go in and Carrie does too. We do separate things. I'm the story guy. I go in and tell stories, and often Jesse will say, "What did you tell him tonight?" And I'll tell him what he says. He says, "Dad, you can't tell him that story." And I said, "They love that story." But I go in and I tell Margot a story, and I pray with them, and I sing. And they even like it when I sing. And Margot always says, as I'm getting ready to leave, "Papa, just leave a little light on. And if you're not, at least leave the door cracked so the light can get in." Advent starts in darkness. The older I get, you can call me a curmudgeon, I don't want cheap light. I don't want cheap light. But we live in a gap. You see, the darkness of daylight savings is welcome. Christ has come, Christ has died, but we live in the gap like the Jewish people waiting for the Messiah under Roman oppression. We wait for the coming of Jesus when darkness will be no more. The last chapter of our Bible makes it prophetically clear. There will be no more night, no more darkness. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun or a crack in the door. For the Lord God will give them light and they will reign forever and ever. Christmas growing up for me was always great until it wasn't. Until it wasn't. When Dad died in 1970, Advent light was greatly dimmed and it became dark. I remember the first couple of Christmas mornings after Dad died. I was 8 and 9. My mom had gifts for my dad under the tree. Like she expected him to be there. Understandably, we found that as kids confusing. There were all the glowing lights of celebration and cheer, and yet a darkness was present, but not spoken. So many understand that. They understand that. But it was into that darkness, into my 8-year-old self, that Jesus started coming down many different ways over the years. And he met me in my growing up years in the absence of my father because of death. Isaiah gives us a picture of our fate. I thought about literally doing this, of going out and raking up a bunch of leaves. And when you came in, I was going to have the whole aisle lined with just a pile of leaves. And then at this point, I was going to get out my blower and I was just going to blow them up all over everybody. Wouldn't that have been a great illustration? I thought so, but I didn't think Glenn would. So, but what does he say? We are shriveled people. Our righteous acts are like filthy rags used for cleaning bodily fluid. The good we do is never complete, pure in motive, yet we strive. He says we're all shriveled up like a leaf. And like the wind, our sin just sweeps us away. Our sin sweeps us away like a dried up leaf. Don't we enter Advent mixed emotionally? I want to affirm that today because I know your stories. Not all of them, but I know a lot of them. Isn't so much of the hype and cheer a cover up for the hidden angst of dark emotions from life's struggles and unanswerable questions? Can we not affirm Advent's darkness? Is our cultural consumerism, Beth talked about it. I mean, it's on display all the time, but you know, before Halloween is even done, the Christmas stuff is out, begging for you to buy. It's a material mask, ignoring Paul's words to the Romans. Remember, he's writing after Christ came, died, and rose again. And he says, we ourselves who have the first fruit of the Spirit, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption, the redemption of our bodies. That word groan, it's a word of discomfort. We are often so concentrate on God speaking in the Christ child during Advent that we ignore or deny the Advent darkness that we and others are experiencing even at that moment. Yes, Christ has come. But I want you to know, things haven't changed much in the world. You ever watch the news lately? Wars are prevalent. Disease destroys bodies. Money evaporates, leaving people worried. Power is placed in the hands of tyrants and the unethical. Fleming Rutledge, one of my favorite writers, I'm sad to say she's got dementia now, but she wrote that the church should refuse cheap comfort and sentimental good cheer. Advent begins, she wrote, in darkness. It begins in darkness. There's a prophecy. We hear words spoken and are called to believe, though we don't fully understand them. We sing, like this morning, hope alive, let the gospel ring. And yet for many, I want you to know there's no bell ringing. In 1996, before Advent in Belgium, a little girl was starved to death in a dungeon by a deranged man. The Catholic priest officiated the funeral. He spoke of passionate prayers offered over and over and over for this child that they found dead. People, there were tears always, there was begging, there were vigils. And as he was speaking, his hands before his congregation were visibly shaking, and his voice was filled with anger. And he said, is the good Lord deaf? Do you see that as an Advent prayer? That's Advent prayer. Look on out at the world and saying, where are you, God? Are you deaf? For the children, the Palestinian children in Gaza, when Israel won't let aid in? This priest knew what we all know well. If we're going to be honest, we know the silence of God. Things haven't changed since Herod slaughtered the male boys in Bethlehem. Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza. It goes on and on. Jeffrey Epstein. The apparent felt absence of God. Isaiah expresses it as God hiding his face from us. God playing hide and seek. Come down. God, come down into our darkness, please. Carl was a retired military chaplain. He was a perfect specimen, he was, of fitness. He focused on two things besides his Christian faith, diet and exercise. And now he wheels his chair down the hall of a nursing home. Every 30 minutes, his cell phone reminds him to shift his weights in hope of avoiding pressure sores. It was a bike accident in New Mexico. He hit a storm drain, flipped over the handlebars, causing paralysis from the chest down. What words describe his situation? Dependency, incontinence, infections, spasms, surgery, darkness. These darknesses I just listed are external, things that he experiences outside of himself. But there's internal darknesses. He confesses he no longer senses God's presence. He lives in an Advent darkness. He lives with despair and the depths. He doesn't doubt prayer, he says. He just is deeply disturbed over God's absence in the middle of what he calls hinge moments. Those times where the activity and work and the presence of God is strongly recognized and strongly felt. Don't you ever just pray for hinge moments in your life and they just don't come? Carl experienced the time when his ulcers were so severe he had to be in bed 24/7. Infections and clots were just trying to slay him. Darkness descended on him, as you can imagine, and God was just felt as being absent. He was alone and he was angry and he was praying Psalm 88. My soul is full of trouble. My life draws near the grave. I'm given a number with those marching into the pit. It's like he's picked his goat into the mortal vehicle place and you got to pick a number. Well, he was given a number. He's walking into the pit. I'm without strength. I'm making company with the dead. I'm cut off from your care. I'm in the lowest pit of darkest depth. Ocean waves crash me into the coral. I'm repulsive. I'm confined. Forced claustrophobia. My eyes swell with sorrow. I'm afflicted and close to death. I'm suffering from your terrors and I'm in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. Your terrors drown me with flooding. And in the Hebrew, this is awesome. In the Hebrew, the NIV translates, you've taken my companions and loved ones from me, and the darkness is my closest friend. But in the Hebrew, the last word in the text is darkness. It's moved a few words forward for translation. It's a psalm and a prayer about being in the dark. While Carl was living that psalm, he had to turn from side to side in hopes of avoiding flesh wounds. And every 30 minutes he turned and he looked at the wall, and there happened to be this picture of Jesus on the wall, the baptism of Jesus. And he would stare at it and he was reminded that God fully came down into our world, came down into our skin. Whatever I'm experiencing here, he said, God experienced too. He even knew the experience of paralysis, he said. He was nailed to a cross and couldn't move. 30 minutes later, he would flip to the other side, and on that wall was a picture of Christ the Almighty. He lays in darkness and glimpses at the Almighty. Looking at the icon, he prayed, "Where are you, Christ the Almighty? Now when I need you, where are you?" He confessed that he lived between those two images of Jesus, and he felt suspended in midair. He felt the future of the Almighty. He felt the abandonment of the cross. It is not a coincidence that Psalm 88 is prayed on Good Friday. It is important for us as Christ followers to affirm darkness in Advent. The world was bleak when Jesus was born. Things were not good for Israel. There was turmoil everywhere. Power-hungry leaders were seeking to dominate and claim territory not their own. Sound familiar? Putin was alive and well at Jesus' birth. Marginalized people were seen as dispensable. I just read this morning about clinics like Beth works in across the country. They're in danger of not making it because of what's going on in our country. Rights were being squeezed from common folk in Jesus' day, just trying to provide for their families and worship their God. People thought they understood God, and they were judging other people according to their misconceptions. And enter Jesus into that darkness. The king is born of a virgin. Who on God's green earth would ever imagine that? It takes an angel visit to Joseph for him to shred the divorce papers. And it takes a dream and sleep's darkness. I often wonder if we pay enough attention to our dreams. Thank God Joseph did. It takes a dream for Joseph to bundle up Jesus, to lift Mary onto a donkey, give her Jesus, and lead them across the border into Egypt as immigrants. We can thank God ICE didn't dial up Herod and send them back to be added to the slaughter of the innocent that was going on. Welcome to the Christmas story. We live in the tension of the already and not yet. The kingdom is here, but the kingdom's not here. Christ has come, but not fully. We live with that tension all the time. Darkness still is present, and at Advent, we are reminded of that. We do a Christmas dinner here. Beth talked about that. I love that. We open the doors to people that we can't communicate with. Oh, some of them we can, but a lot of them we can't. The first couple that came on the night of giving out the Thanksgiving boxes, they had seven in their family, but they just came with their two littlest kids. Couldn't communicate with them a bit, but the little kids, the joy of just saying, they looked at me and they said, thank you, thank you, thank you, and they just smiled, these beautiful children. Sometimes I wonder what's we're going to be called to as a church. Are we going to be called to be an Egypt for the people in our community? Egypt welcomed Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. Will we be called to be an Egypt to our neighbors and our friends? I mean, when it is our entering, when we do these things, into the Advent darkness, the welcoming of Jesus into the walls of the church. We don't like to chat about darkness. And I've learned that. I've been a pastor all my life. No matter where I'm at or what my title is, I'm always a pastor. People don't make appointments with me to chat about all the great things going on in their lives. They come and to talk about the darkness that's become blinding, the silence of God that is deafening. And they want help. So they come in private. Psalm 88 is profound in its affirmation. The Bible's not selling us a rosy view of life. So much of American Christianity tries to do that. The Bible is not a Thomas Kincaid painting. I find that honoring to my humanity. But let me quote you just a profound line from Wesley. Not John, not Charles, the dead pirate Roberts from The Princess Bride. Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who tells you differently is selling something. The longer you live, you know that is true. We don't want to hear that Christmas message from the dread pirate Roberts, Wesley. We can jump to the Gospel of Mark 13. We read it this morning. And the image of the doorkeeper. It starts with the idea of, you know, there's all these servants and they have the task to do, but there's a doorkeeper. There's one doorkeeper. The doorkeeper is the point of that little parable. And the question is, are you a doorkeeper? Are you a doorkeeper? Everyone in here needs to be a doorkeeper. We don't understand when things will unfold in our lives. We're in the dark as to when the dark will become blazing with light. And so we wait with Advent hope. Jesus says in Mark 13 that one is to stay by the door and keep watch. And then he gives the 4 hours of the night, Mark does. Why does Mark give the 4 hours? Because those are the Roman hours of the night, not the Jewish hours of the night. The Jews had three. But he wants to include these Gentiles in, these outsiders into this story to be people that are watching and waiting through the night. They can't fall asleep and it's dark. But when the master returns, they got to be by the door. My question for you and me is, what are we waiting at the door for in our lives but in the blackness of the dark? What are you waiting for right now? What are we keeping watch for in the night of our lives? Maybe very personal, it may be family, maybe sickness? What are the circumstances that cause us to say, God, why do you delay so long? Are you deaf? That dark doorkeeper place in your life and mine, I want you to know that's a holy spot. Psalm 84, I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of God than to dwell in the house of the wicked. I loved what I read in my quiet time this week. It's by Carlo Coretto, The God Who Comes. Oh, how each one of us would like to be the bridegroom who returns disguised as a poor stranger, whom she, the wife, does not recognize, but to whom she repeats it again and again, her certainty of his return and the sweetness of his love. Well, every evening when the darkness wraps itself around my prayer, he, God, is there disguised as a poor man watching me. When I endure in the darkness of faith, the prolonged wait for God who comes, he has already come to me and is embracing me silently with the same embrace with which I, in faith, embrace him. God's coming is an assured thing. Sometimes he's there and we just can't see him. So what pain do you bring to the communion table this morning? Who or what circumstances pulls at your heart to despair as you chew the bread and drink of the vine? As a doorkeeper, you're a doorkeeper. What are you watching for, hoping for, anticipating through the Advent darkness? Darkness. Be a watcher in the darkness. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.